Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are there as well. Today is November 29th, 2017. The markets were mixed a bit. The Dow closing at 23,940, the NASDAQ at 68.24, and the S&P, which was kind of flat, at 26.26. Our topic tonight is managing debt and your options. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight we're talking about managing debt and your options. I first want to say I hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving. We weren't here last week. In fact, I was at the LifePath Luncheon, which is a fundraiser for that organization and sponsored by the PICPA and many of our local businesses in the area as well. And it's a time to be thankful. As we move into the holidays, we also know that there is a lot of gift giving at this time. And sometimes we splurge. Sometimes we go overboard. There are many ways to be thankful and grateful and show our appreciation and love for each other without having to go into debt to do so or to be financially strapped to do so. My daughter is making a memory book for her boyfriend. In the past, we've done photo collages. You can give of your time. My daughter is going to organize a room for us. So you can think of a lot of things to do for each other, your loved ones, without having to spend money necessarily. So many times these days, we have what we need. So we don't always need to kind of go overboard and buy extra things. In fact, my mother was saying, Lori Ann, don't buy me anything this year. I don't need anything. She's 87 years old. Well, I'd already bought her a new nightgown and robe. And no, I don't need it. I said, Mom, you can have a new nightgown once in a while. I think the one she still wears is the one I bought her probably 10 or 15 years ago. Not a big expenditure for me, but something nice for her. So you want to just think about that and be reasonable. But I thought at this time of year to take that pressure off folks who might think they have to spend, or do a lot of gift giving. Sometimes people think it's tit for tat. You know, oh, well, my friend always buys me a nice present of $100, so I need to spend $100. Well, maybe you don't. You know, have a conversation with your friend about that. A friend of mine from Michigan and I, we used to exchange gifts all the time. And at some point we just said, you know what, we do not need to exchange gifts any longer. We were still buying for each other's children. We don't even do that anymore. So it's just nice having time together. And that's what we try to do. Maybe go out for a coffee, get a bite to eat. So take that pressure off you. You really don't need to do it. I once had a client come. And when we were doing a financial plan for him, we were looking at the expenses. He had a budget of gift giving of $10,000. And I'm like, holy mackerel, you have two kids, $10,000 gift giving? What's going on with that? And he goes, well, I have a lot of nieces and nephews, and we, you know, buy gifts for them. I'm like, no wonder there were like 20 nieces and nephews. These folks went crazy with gift giving. And my solution to that was draw names. I mean, if you're still going to have these big Christmas or holiday celebrations with your family and all the children, you don't need to have to buy for everyone. First of all, it's a lot of pressure and a lot of time and stress at this time of year with shopping and traffic and all of that. Drawing names is a simple solution. So, you know, try to be ahead of the game when you're thinking about the upcoming weeks and what obligations you have as far as, you know, gift giving and taking that pressure off yourself. So I thought, let's talk about managing debt and then some of your options. So my first piece of advice is, first, stay out of debt. Stay out of it, at least to the extent that you can. There is different types of debt, which I'll talk about in a minute. But one way that we can manage our cash flow is to maybe have a budget, but so many people get stressed out when they even hear the word budget. They don't like talking about budgets. So you have to make it as easy as possible for yourself. So I'm going to give you a couple ideas. First of all, for, as they were just talking about on the last segment, smartphones. For people with smartphones and mobile apps, there are so many different apps available now to help people manage their money that you can kind of automate it. Take that pressure off yourself. See if you could automate it. And there was an article, I believe it was in PC Magazine by Jill Duffy back December 28, 2016, where she highlighted some of the best apps. And one of them was Mint.com. In fact, they say that's their favorite, which really intrigued me because, gosh, several years ago, we had a representative from Mint.com on the radio show to talk about the app. And at that time, it was really fairly new. So I was really glad to see that that is an app that has survived all the iterations and changes over the years with software and people's attention span of sticking with something, but it seemed like Mint.com seemed to stay with it. And it is a free app. It is available on the iTunes store. It was the editor's choice. And it said area of specialization, spending analysis, and it connects directly to your accounts. There is an Android app as well, an iOS app, and a web version. And what else did it say? Another one that they mentioned was Venmo. They also said that was free as well, but that is area of specialization is peer-to-peer payment. So I don't know exactly what that is, but it was an article, again, PC Magazine, I believe, Jill Duffy, and it was called The Best Mobile Finance Apps of 2017. So if you are interested in doing all the comparison, they have links to those apps and reviews of those apps as well. Let's see what else she might have said about this. Mint was their favorite, and she said the automation available in today's personal finance apps is astounding. And the editor's choice Mint can consolidate all your transactions across multiple credit cards and bank accounts into one view. You can see all the transactions that happen across all your accounts and get a tally of all your balances. They also can send push notifications if you're about to hit the budget limit you set in a given category. So it sounds like you go in and kind of set up a category ranking of your budget and how much money you want to spend. You'll get a warning before you break the bank, and it sounds like it must be fairly easy to do, as it was the editor's choice. Also, how much are you worth? Knowing how much money you have and how much money you owe is where everyone should start. And there are two apps that excel in that area, Mint and this Learn Vest. With either of these apps, you can not only calculate your net worth, but also go through your spending habits with a fine-tooth comb. So, for example, when I mentioned that client who was spending $10,000 on gifts, there's national averages of what people spend based on income, and they were way above that average. So there are apps that could kind of tell you if this seems to be a good spending habits, I would expect as well. So Mint.com is one you can check out, that Life Vest, and then and or Venmo. So more information on that article, PC Magazine, Best Mobile Finance Apps of 2017. We're at our first break. When I come back, I'll tell you an even simpler way. If you're not someone who likes mobile apps, you like doing it the old-fashioned way, I'll give you a couple ideas on that. Phone number 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about managing debt and your options tonight. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me at 610-758-8810. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just submit a question. When you call in, Lori C. answers the line, and she can write down the question and bring it into the studio to me, and then I'll just answer the question, what we call, you know, off air. You won't be live. So either way, the phone number is 610-758-8810. I'm also battling a little bit of a cold, if you hear it in my voice or if I end up stopping to talk and have to cough or something. Just giving you fair warning. I just mentioned a way to budget might be using a mobile app, and I mentioned a PC Magazine article back in December of 2016 that ranked all the different apps and the features of them, and you can get more information by searching for that. A simple way, if you don't have online banking or you don't want to do things online, you don't want to use the app, we call it the funnel method at our office. Basically, if you have a savings account and a checking account, you have your checks directly deposited to your savings account. That could be whether it's your payroll payroll or your Social Security or your pension. Have them directly deposited into a savings account. And once a month, you transfer the amount of your living expenses. So if you deposit, you know, $4,000 a month, and you know that you're spending $3,000 a month, you would transfer $3,000 a month to your checking account. So your checking account would be running, you know, fairly, close to zero or kind of thin there. But you know then that you're spending what you thought, $3,000 a month. If you have to keep taking more and more money from your savings account, then you're spending more than you thought you were. And maybe you're not going to reach your other goals if you're spending more than you think. Maybe the money will build up a little bit in your checking account, and that would indicate that you're not spending as much as you thought. Or it could mean that the monthly amount is an average, and maybe it's building up because you're going to have your real estate tax bill due in August, and you need to have the money for that. So you kind of want to roll with this for a little bit and see how it works and see if it fits for you. But it's kind of a way to safeguard your spending and kind of have a handle on it. A third way, some people use envelopes, and they might like cash, and they might put an envelope, you know, on the counter for groceries of you know, $400, another envelope for utilities of $100, another envelope for gas of, you know, $50. And then they set up the envelopes for the month or the week. And when they're gone, it's just gone. So if your grocery money's gone and you want to run to the store and buy a bag of potato chips, you can't because there's no money there. So an envelope method works for some people too. And I think it was a client recently told me that they actually use an app that has this kind of envelope philosophy or way of doing it on an app. So they bought an app that on their phone that tracks their budgeting in this envelope scenario, but on their phone. So you want to look to see what is out there, because bottom line, you want to find a method that's going to work for you, whether that is using an Excel spreadsheet, using a software like Quicken, using an app like Mint.com, using paper envelopes on your counter, whatever it is that's going to work for you to help you manage your spending is what you want to do. Just find something that's going to work. It's really empowering to get that under control. Because when you can, if you're not controlling your spending and you're not paying attention, you're maybe using a credit card to buy all those little extras. If you're not vigilant, you're going to see those credit card balances build up and build up. And just like when I talk to people about how your savings can start working for you, earning money, you have investments that earn money for you, they start working for you, and you have the power of compounding, and you make more money on more money, that kind of thing. That's how rich get richer, because they've got money compounding and earning money and blah, blah, blah. The same thing happens if you have debt and you're paying high interest rates. That too compounds, but that's like a snowball into an avalanche. And you definitely don't want to get into that situation. And it can very unknowingly happen. Little credit card, you know, charge here, then you have a car repair, and then whoops, the water heater went out. Oh, it's 0% interest, not a big deal, I'm just going to run with that. Well, you've gotten into the habit then of putting some of those extra expenses or those emergency kind of expenses on a credit card, 0% interest, you're thinking not a bad deal, and you know, 0% interest is a great deal. But if you haven't then budgeted the payments for that in your bank account or set that money aside somewhere, when it comes time to have that 0% rate roll over into a 24% rate or a 29% rate, and all of a sudden you don't have the money to pay it, now we're talking about compounding. So, you know, $1,000 at 25% rate in a year is $1,250, and the minimum payments might be, you know, $20 on that. Well, you're never going to get out from under that. So you want to find a way to control your debt, because you don't want it to get out of control. Why is it important to control debt? Well, number one, because it costs so much money. Different kinds of debt can cost, you know, as I mentioned, credit cards, 24%, 29%. We have student loan debt. We have mortgages. We have cars. As we rack up debt, it could affect our credit. And our credit rating is what helps us get access to better rates when we go apply for loans such as our home purchases. So you want to be careful what kind of debt you're accruing, how well you're paying off that debt, how quickly you're paying off that debt. Are you paying off that debt timely? All of this comes into play on a credit report, and the credit report, again, will help us get more competitive rates when we want to buy something really important like a new home or something necessary like a car to get us to work, hopefully a used car. So you want to control your credit so that your credit rating is good. It also can impact your ability to rent. It can impact your ability to get a job. Some employers will check your credit before they hire you. So you want to stay ahead of this before you get into trouble. So as I mentioned, there's also different types of debt. We're coming up on our second break. When I come back from that break, I will talk about the different types of debt and where it might make sense then to have debt. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll take your calls either live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just call in and give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down, and then she'll bring that into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer that question. So 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And welcome back. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and this is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about managing debt and your options around that as we're talking, different things to do. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to call in at that same number. Give your question to Lori C., and she will write it down and bring it into the studio, and we can do our best to answer it. Now, I forgot that I did want to talk about another little article I had pulled up on how to build credit. So if you do have maybe problems with credit, or maybe you don't have credit yet because you're, you know, fresh out of college, there was an article by Aaron L. Issa and Bev O'Shea. It sounds like they're Irish. I don't recall where this article was from, but it's called How to Build Credit. And they mention a few little tips, building credit by becoming an authorized user on someone else's card or with a credit builder loan or secured credit card, paying on time and keeping credit use low. So they refer to, you know, building credit could be tricky if you don't have a history. So how are you going to do that? One of the methods, apply for a secured credit card. So what do they have to say about that? It said if you're building your credit score from scratch, you'll likely need to start with a secured credit card, which is backed by a cash deposit. You make up front. The deposit amount is usually the same as your credit limit, and you use it like a credit card buying things, but then you make a payment on or before the due date, incur interest if you don't pay your balance in full. Your cash deposit is used as collateral if you fail to make payments. So I guess the idea is you buy one of these secured credit cards, you put maybe $1,000 into it, and then they allow you to use it like a credit card. So maybe I run into the gas station and buy $25 worth of gas. At the end of the month, I get my statement. I pay my $25 out of my bank account because my $1,000 is still sitting over here at this credit card company as security. And that helps you build up credit. They do mention that this is not usually an account you keep open. You eventually close it. They're not meant to be used forever. The purpose is to build your credit enough to qualify for an unsecured card, which typically will have better benefits without you having to put that deposit down. Choose a secured card with a low annual fee and make sure it reports to all three credit bureaus, the credit bureaus being Equifax, Experience, and TransUnion. NerdWallet regularly reviews and ranks secured credit card options. That's where I think this article is from, NerdWallet. The second thing they mention is applying for a credit builder loan. I wasn't as keen on this idea. They said it is exactly what it sounds. Its sole purpose is to help people build credit. Typically, the money you borrow is held by the lender in an account. So I suppose that makes sense if you're don't have the money to do something like that secured card that I just mentioned. You're actually borrowing. I'm a little bit more nervous about this. I would rather see someone kind of build up some cash and do one of the secured ones rather than starting off trying to build up credit with a loan. Just makes me a little bit more nervous about that. A third option, get a cosigner. It's also possible to get a loan or an unsecured credit card using a cosigner. But be sure that the cosigner understands that they may be on the hook for any amount that you don't pay. Become an authorized user on someone else's credit card. So a family member or significant other may be willing to add you as an authorized user on his or her card. As an authorized user, you'll also enjoy access to a credit card and you'll build credit history. But you aren't legally obligated to pay for your charges. But then, here again, you have to find out whether the card issuer reports authorized user activity to the credit bureaus. So that I wouldn't, I'm not sure how that would work and what fine print you have to read or who you can ask about that, but that is certainly an option. Get credit for the rent you pay. That's the fifth one. Rent reporting services. So there's certain rent reporting services that will take your bill that you're already paying and put it on your credit report. And that helps you build a positive history to show that you're making on-time payments. So I guess you would work with a landlord or this Rental Karma or Rent Track to kind of see how they do it. Again, I'm assuming this is, you know, the U.S. I've not heard of either of these organizations before, but that might be something to explore if you don't want those other options we've already mentioned. They do also say, though, that you want to make sure that they report those payments on your credit history. Again, that's the whole point of it. So build your score with good habits. You want to make sure that if you do any of these endeavors that you're making timely payments, they're on time, maybe even paying in full. It shows good habits. Make 100% of your payments on time, not only with credit accounts, but also with your other accounts, such as utility bills. Bills that go unpaid may be sold to a collection agency, will seriously hurt your credit. So you want to be careful about that, and also avoid opening too many new accounts at once. New accounts lower your average account age, which makes up part of your credit score. I will also caution people about opening up too many credit cards at local retailers. I have found experience has been that local retailers sometimes have very high interest rates, and they have great deals, and I mean, I use them. I just want to caution folks. You get certain coupons or discounts, and it's a great way. For me, it's great because I only use it when I'm absolutely shopping. It doesn't encourage me to shop more, which is what their goal is. The retailer's goal is to get you shopping more and more. I get emails every single day in my inbox from a particular small retailer around here, and it makes me a little crazy, but what it actually provided for me was a way that I could just kind of tone it out. I don't even notice the emails anymore because I was getting so many emails, and I truly only use the credit card when I absolutely have to shop and I'm in a shopping mood. So you've got to be careful, and the caution is don't get taken in by too many gimmicks to get you to use that credit card, because the interest rates, the finance charges on those credit cards can be very high very quickly. So be careful on that. Also, when people use the 0% credit cards that I mentioned, if they just keep rolling them over, I'm not sure what impact that's going to have in your credit if you just continue to run that credit. But again, the big fear for me always is at some point, if you mess up on the payment on the 0% cards, or you expire out of that 0% period, all of a sudden you have payments due and you're not used to budgeting that way because you think it's free money. So just be very careful of using 0% credit cards as well. It works if you're very disciplined. Folks, we are coming up on the halfway point. When we come back, I am going to continue my conversation about the different types of debt, because sometimes if it's investment related and you're investing in things, it might make sense. I'll talk about that. And then also what happens if you get in trouble with debt, cancellation of debt, insolvency, bankruptcy. What are some of the highlights of that? If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available on the website at wdiy.org. Welcome back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. If you have questions, 610-758-8810. We can talk live on air or off air. I'm thinking, Shandi, that everyone's out shopping, spending money on their credit cards, which works out well because, you know, we have retail backgrounds here. So we like to see people in the stores. So as far as watching your credit, careful how you're spending, use funnel method or apps to help with your budget, try to control your debt, build up your credit. If you do have credit or you need to check your credit, as we've mentioned on a prior show, you can check your scores or at least get your credit report and information from any of three organizations, Experian, TransUnion, or Equifax. And I believe you can get one report from each year. So it doesn't hurt once in a while to go out and check your credit. And again, we talked about that on prior shows as well. And in fact, the Equifax breach, I think we just talked about maybe even a couple weeks ago. If you want information on that, the podcasts are available on WDIY.org. Just go under local programming and look for Your Financial Choices and find the topic there. So we are talking about different types of debt. So let me talk about that for a minute, because, you know, probably the worst kind of debt is credit card debt, as far as I'm concerned, because generally credit card debt is probably, for the most part, we're spending. Well, I shouldn't say that, because I use a credit card. My husband and I use a credit card almost exclusively for all of our purchases every month. So we actually have quite a big credit card bill every month. And it's handy because we get back points, which we can use for other things, paying back our, you know, our bill, or we used to use it for travel and tickets, but we pay off our credit card every month. Where I get concerned when people are running balances is sometimes they're buying not needs, they're buying wants. And that's where I have a bigger concern. We want you to control that so you can have a good credit score, so you can go out and maybe borrow for investment purposes, such as a new home. Quite often, you know, I've talked about the different stages people go through, and we talked about the testing stage and the nesting stage, and that nesting stage is, you know, you meet someone maybe, or you're feeling like you want to settle down in a particular community. Maybe you have a job and you're feeling comfortable with that job and you think you're going to want to stay there for a while, and you want to settle down. You don't want to rent anymore. Like the gentleman who was on the segment before I came in, where he's a student at Harvard and he's in the attic sharing a room with five roommates. So, you know, you're at a point where you want to settle down, want to buy a home. Your credit score is going to be very important for that, and how much you're going to, what kind of interest rate you're going to get. So home acquisition debt, you know, I feel a little bit better about than credit card debt. And the home acquisition debt, you know, you're talking about, you know, typical rates these days of maybe, you know, 3.75, 4, 4.5, that type of thing, versus credit card debt, 24, 25, 29%. So home acquisition debt, you know, you're making an investment in your home. You hope that it'll grow in value, and we sometimes get income tax deductions for those that investment. The mortgage interest is an income tax deduction. I think even under the tax reform, we're still going to get home mortgage interest deduction for the most part. Some people, you know, there's a flip and a flop on standard deduction versus itemizing. If I have a few minutes at the end of the show, I can talk about that. But that has been one of the attractions to buying a home, is that you would get a deduction for the home mortgage interest and the real estate taxes. So some of that might be changing a little bit. Vehicles, you know, we buy vehicles, and I like people to be smart about the vehicles they're buying, but the most important thing about having a vehicle is transportation to hopefully your job, that is going to support your living. So we do want to make sure that at such time we need a vehicle to get to and fro from work, and we want something that's reliable that we can count on. You may end up having to finance the purchase of that vehicle. You could buy a used car, save up money. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law, they've always had a pot. They save up, and when they're ready to buy a car, they pay cash. Sometimes we can pay cash for vehicles, and sometimes we can't because they might be just too expensive. But how you manage that is to look at, do your shopping and maybe look at and see if a used car is going to provide you with the security and reliability that you would need. And you can even get good used car loans nowadays as well. Maybe you're a homeowner and you're managing that debt, you know, well, you might have access to a home equity loan that you could use to purchase a vehicle. So that's always an option. Sometimes the dealerships will have pretty good rates. It's all about doing your homework, spending a little time, not being so reactive to things. We want to be proactive, which, if I could just make a digress for a moment and make one comment about this tax reform, I don't understand how they can push something through so quickly without really vetting it and thinking it through. I wouldn't want my children to make a decision about something so consequential so quickly without really thinking it through and understanding how it's going to impact everyone. I imagine, you know, a family with five kids and, you know, mom and dad die and everything goes to the five kids, and you know, three of them want it one way and two of them want it the other way, but the spouses are the ones who are controlling everything. So, you know, you just have to vet things through, think it through. I just wish there was a little bit more time on some of the tax reform, because I think we're going to be all a little surprised as to the impact on a number of people. Student loans being one of them. And I'm reflecting on this simply because as I was driving in tonight, that is what the story was about, talking about the grad students whose tuition may end up being income taxable to them. So the example was $30,000 stipend. They're teaching and working and doing research at the school. So the school says, hey, you grad student, you're working really hard, doing all this lab work, and we're going to let you come to school and not charge tuition and give you this $30,000 stipend to live. And the tuition's $50,000. The kids aren't going to have enough money to pay their income tax. So now in an economy that we want to grow with technology and advancements and information and research and development, there isn't going to be anyone going to school to want to do that because they're not going to be able to afford to go to college, not to mention the loans that they'll have to take out even for their living expenses, because quite often the stipend and the tuition isn't even enough to cover their living expenses. But I will say student loans, I believe, still are going to be worth it for most people if it helps you get that education that's going to get you that better job. Not only the better job, but quite often help you keep the job that you eventually get, because folks with advanced degrees tend to have less unemployment, better employment, higher income. So student loans is a debt that, you know, I feel I wouldn't avoid a student loan because of the debt. I don't want to scare people off from taking on debt if it's more of an investment, whether it's an investment in your home, an investment in a vehicle to give you the transportation to maybe school or to work, or student loans to help your education development. Credit cards are the big no-no. But again, let me go back, because I do want to mention credit cards. As I said, how do you build up credit? You do want some credit so that you can qualify for things like certain renting. My daughter's boyfriend went to rent a car the other day. He's 26 years old and had reserved it, no problem. But then when he went to pick up the rental car, he handed them a debit card. He's only used cash. He's very frugal. And they wouldn't accept the debit card because he said, you know, he doesn't have credit. So we had to have a little talk with him about developing or building up some credit. So get a credit card, as we talked about earlier, maybe a secured credit card where you put some money down. Build up some credit so you can rent a car if you need to. And eventually qualify for better financing for home acquisition or vehicles or things like that. What happens if you get in trouble with debt? So that's what I will talk about in a little bit. Some people are so happy shopping and makes them feel good to buy things and don't worry too much about the credit card, because the credit card, you know, has a minimum payment due of $30 a month. And they don't realize that sometimes the interest is even accruing at a faster rate than their minimum payment. So it snowballs, builds up, avalanche. All of a sudden we have huge debts on credit card. And we'll hear people talk about, oh, well, you know, I had that canceled. I just told them I couldn't pay it. They canceled my debt. Or maybe you want to file for bankruptcy. So there are times when it could be self-inflicted. There could be times where you run into these situations where it's not self-inflicted, but just a matter of circumstance. Circumstance such as you go to college, you take out student loans, and you can't get a job, or the job, you know, if you took out student loans for a private school of $50,000 a year and you're now an artist making, you know, $12,000 a year, may be very difficult for you to make ends meet. Maybe you've had an illness, or someone in the family has had an illness. Maybe the breadwinner has had an illness, and you think it's only going to be a short period of time. And so you use the credit card kind of as a backup, as an emergency reserve. And all of a sudden you realize the illness continues on, or, you know, or a job is lost. There's a disability, and maybe you didn't have disability insurance. So there are circumstances that lead us sometimes into situations where we have incurred a lot of debt that we can't pay back. And we need a safety net, some way to help us get back on our feet and get out from under the debt. So there's both situations. So you have to be kind of sensitive to that. But they might have different results as well. So some of this can be very complicated. And I'm not going to be able to cover everything that one might encounter, such as foreclosures or short sales, things like that on homes. I could do a whole show on just that. But a little bit on cancellation of debt and insolvency, and a little bit on bankruptcy. I don't see this often, so I'm not an expert on any of these areas, but I thought I should cover it a little bit in this segment tonight. So I'm actually coming up on my last break, so I'm going to stretch out this last minute, Shandi, and then come back and kind of talk about some high-level information on cancellation of debt and insolvency and what it might mean, because it might not mean what you think. You think you can just walk away from it? Well, not always, and that's the caution I want people to know about. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can ask questions live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. And if your question is ever too complicated or convoluted, or you want to really remain private, you can always send questions to me through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. And I am generally very good at getting back to people and not bothering them further. So, and it's always general in nature, though, by the way. But if you do have questions, 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY 88.1. Welcome back. We are talking about managing debt and your options. And regular listeners know I try to be proactive, right? Not reactive. So everything we've already talked about is more on the proactive side, staying ahead of managing the debt. And now we're just going to take a few minutes talking about the other side, the reactive piece. Oh, golly gee, I built up a bunch of debt. What am I going to do? So you can have certain debts canceled. And this is from the IRS publication. Let me tell you which one. 4681. And they have a whole publication on canceled debts, foreclosures, repossessions, and abandonments. And canceled debt, generally, if a debt for which you are personally liable is forgiven or discharged for less than the full amount owed, the debt is considered canceled in whatever amount it remained unpaid. Generally, you must include the canceled debt in your income. That's the piece that I think many people are surprised about. So you rack up all these bills on credit cards. You talk to the credit card companies and ask, oh, please, will you, you know, cancel my debt? I heard my friend did it. And they canceled the debt. You think you're good to go. And then all of a sudden at tax time, you get a 1099 in the mail saying that you have some canceled debt. And you say to your tax person, or you enter it in TurboTax or H&R Block, and they say, wait, what? This comes up as taxable income on page one of my tax return, other income? But I didn't have any other income. Why is this taxable to me? I didn't get income. Well, if you racked up $5,000 of expenses on a credit card, that $5,000 was represented by something, right? It might be things. It might be, you know, a new water heater, a new window, a new floor. It might be clothes. It might be tchotchkes, it could be iTunes, whatever it might be. You racked up some expenditures on this credit card, you got something for it. So if I now have received goods, services, whatever it might be, $5,000 worth, and I charged it on my credit card, meaning I didn't pay for it, but I got those services. So if that credit card company cancels that debt for me, then it's going to be considered income. So and to the extent they do. So let's pretend maybe it was $5,000 and I paid back two and they're only canceling three. Some of that is going to be taxable income or could be taxable income. Now, certain canceled debts don't always necessarily have to be included in income. There are exceptions. One of the most, I would see, say, obvious exception, which as a tax preparer, the most obvious exception is something called insolvency. But a lot of people might not realize that there could be an exception to you having to report it as income. And that is if to the extent that you were insolvent immediately before the cancellation. So don't include a canceled debt in income to the extent that you were insolvent immediately before the cancellation. You don't qualify for the insolvency exclusion by, you know, if you're an owner or partnership, you've got to be careful what might or might not apply to you. But in this publication, they have a worksheet that you can go through to see if you are insolvent. And some of the things they ask you, and I've had to do this for just maybe one or two people in my entire career, but the insolvency worksheet looks at your liabilities, including your credit card debt, mortgages, car loans, medical bills, student loans, federal or state income taxes, business debts, other liabilities. So you list all your liabilities, and then you list your assets, your cash and bank accounts, your real estate, including the value of the land, cars and other vehicles. So let's pretend you have a $5,000 loan on your car, but your car is worth $6,000. You're going to put the car loan up on the top of $5,000 and you're going to put your $6,000 car on the bottom. Computers, household goods, furnishings. So see, the IRS knows you might have like racked up all these goodies in your home on your credit card. So they're going to make you count those as an asset. Tools, jewelry, clothing, books, stocks, bonds, investments and coins, paintings, stamps, firearms, sports, photographic equipment, interest in retirement accounts. So that's an asset, IRA, 401k, interest in a pension plan, interest in education accounts. These are all the assets you list. Cash value of a life insurance policy, security deposits with landlords. So you've listed the liabilities, you list the assets, and then you subtract. So the reason liabilities are on the top is the only way you're insolvent is if your liabilities exceed your assets. So that is the amount of insolvency. So if I simply had a $3,000 credit card and I had $100,000 in my retirement account and they canceled my $3,000 credit card, I'm not insolvent because I have $100,000 in my retirement account. So if I'm not insolvent, then that canceled debt ends up being income. But I did have a situation where there was, I believe it was a woman, they were just down on their luck, like one thing after another, it seemed like, and there really weren't any assets, and their insolvency exceeded the amount of the canceled debt, therefore it was not income. I had another accountant or tax preparer in the firm who did the same worksheet, and their person, their amount of insolvency was less than the debt canceled, but not the full amount. So if the debt canceled might have been $10,000 and they were insolvent by seven, then they did not have to recognize the seven, but the three would still have been included in income. All right, so there's some information to go through on that. Cancellation of debt is not always insolvency. Some other exceptions to recognizing canceled debt as income might be bankruptcy. So if you did file for bankruptcy, debts canceled in Title 11 bankruptcy are not included in income. And Title 11 includes Chapter 7. You hear people say Chapter 7 bankruptcy, Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and 13. It includes all of those. Then that would be not subject. There are also lots of other rules around it. So there's certain things that, let's pretend you get the debt canceled and you don't have to recognize it as income because of the insolvency. You still might have to adjust maybe the remaining assets, their value down for the amount of the canceled debt that you didn't report as income. It's called, I think, tax attribution or something like that. So they're not going to let you get away with saying you're insolvent and not recognizing the canceled debt as income, and then having, let's pretend, a car worth $20,000 that now you go sell for $30,000, you make a $10,000 gain. Woohoo! No, they would make you reduce your basis, what you've paid for certain of these assets in some of these situations. All right, so sometimes a canceled debt may be excluded from your income. If you do exclude it, you may be required to reduce your tax attributes. That's what that is about. Real quick, just a little note on foreclosure and repossession. I'm not going to talk about this too much. It's too complicated. Foreclosure and repossession are remedies that your lender may exercise if you fail to make payments on your loan and you have previously granted that lender a mortgage or other security interest in some of your property. These remedies allow the lender to seize or sell the property, securing the loan. When your property is foreclosed upon or repossessed and sold, you are treated as having sold the property, and you may recognize taxable gain. Whether you also recognize income from canceled debt depends in part on whether you are personally liable for the debt and in part on whether the outstanding loan balance is more than the fair market value of the property.